Hello and welcome to Film Wonk. This is Glenn. I'm here with Daniel.
Hello.
And we also have our friend Nick here today.
Hi there.
And we just came back from seeing The King's Speech, the new film from director Tom Hooper, starring Jeffrey Rush, Colin Firth, and Helena Bonham Carter. This film, we were not exactly kind to last week.
Sure weren't.
In our podcast for The Fighter, we recorded a, let's call it a skit. I believe we called it a blooper, but it was a bit, of us riffing on a scene from the trailer of The King's Speech, and it's a scene in which the king is chastising his speech therapist, Lionel Logue, for sitting in the Holy of Holies in St. Edward's chair, and this scene, it seemed like just the kind of the kind of silly dialogue that you would find in award fodder movies this time of year. The dramatic breakthrough moments, those heartbreaking performances that are ever so much Oscar bait that the Weinstein Company seems to specialize in. They release the movies in December, they campaign for them in January, and they collect Oscar gold the next month or whenever they do the Oscars.
Which apparently makes a profitable movie.
You know, I have to say, after a few weeks, this movie was still drawing an impressive crowd. So I think it's definitely gaining some traction. But that is not what we are here to talk about tonight. The question, Daniel, were we, and Nick, were we needlessly unkind to this movie last week? Did that scene, and indeed the entire story of this this king, this monarch, overcoming his speech difficulties, did it inspire, or was it cheesy award fodder?
It was a little bit of both. How the trailer was cut for that scene made it look really silly. It made it seem like it was one of those, look, the black kid's hanging out with the white kid's, now it's okay because there's a breakthrough moment. Everyone cry, give me your money. It was a work fodder. You know, it ain't really. And the trailer I thought was stupid. Like I had every intention of going in to see this movie and hating it. I'm thinking it was pedantic. It was everything I hate about movies. But I think it worked. I think the relationship between the speech therapist and the king was fantastic, and I actually thoroughly enjoyed myself.
Yeah, I have to agree. I went in expecting pageantry. I went in expecting a portrait of the royal family and how they are a world apart from the rest of us. And,
yeah, nobles are people, too.
But in fact, I got that, and not in any cheesy sense. I mean, we were treated to these nice little moments, like when Bertie comes back, and his daughters, Elizabeth, the future Queen of England, and Princess Margaret was the other one. They don't approach him, they don't hug him like they clearly want to. One of them says to the other, "You have to curtsy," mm-hmm. and they address him as "Your Majesty," and that was just such a striking moment for me. That's of what this king represents to the country and even to his family, that's kind of what sells moments like the end in which we see the titular king's speech, this address that he makes to his people leading up to World War II, and it was earned. That ending felt earned, and it was not. It also was not that stereotypical sort of moment where the actor is feigning the difficulty that he's meant to tackle, and has completely overcome it by simply speaking normally at the end.
Yeah, he certainly hasn't mastered it yet, but he has confidence and he has control.
Yeah, and I think that is the mastery of this movie, is Colin Firth's performance. I think this is easily the finest performance I've ever seen from him. I don't know how much of it was just very careful sound design and how much of it was just very calculated voice work on his part. But I have to imagine he had to see a speech therapist to learn how to stammer.
Yeah, it was a really wondrous performance. I bought it completely that, you know, he stammered. So, what'd you think, Nick?
Sorry, I was deep in thought there. I was thinking about parallels to our society and how they were struggling to find a national identity and there was a war going on. And there's perhaps some parallels. The king who preceded him, his brother, acted disgracefully or, you know, disgraced himself and had to leave. You know, give up the throne. You know, these are not unprecedented.
Well, indeed, some of what the film addresses as far as the controversy with his brother leaving the throne. Now, granted, I'm not even going to call these spoilers because these are spoilers for 20th century history. So I think we can pretty safely talk about what happens in this movie. But I think the one thing we found in subsequent reading about this movie is that the film downplayed the potential sympathies of his brother, was it Harry? The other one?
It was David.
David, right. His potential sympathies for the Nazi Party, and I mean, there was brief mention of it about how his mistress was receiving flowers from the German ambassador.
Yeah, big old Ribbentrop.
But yeah, I mean, I think the movie quite deliberately exists within this very closed off world. I mean, we catch a glimpse of the outside in the end, where we see these little scenes of people sitting by the gates outside Buckingham Palace and sitting by their radios, and we see British soldiers crowding around a Jeep radio, and that's really the only glimpse we get at the commoners, at the people being affected by this speech. People that we know are in for some very hard times.
Bloody peasants.
Indeed.
Yeah, the Blitz is coming.
Well, these bloody peasants are about to get a whole lot bloodier, and that's what we know at the end of the movie. So to craft an inspiring moment while very carefully balancing the tone, I think is pretty impressive.
Yeah, I would agree. I actually kind of like the brother character. I wanted to get to know him more because he's kind of this playboy and he play by the rules, and he's not in the movie long enough, I think, to really establish his character too well. Because all you get from him is just glimpses of who he is and why he's abdicating the throne. But I want to learn a little bit more about him and maybe a little bit more about that family dynamic.
Nick, you started to say something?
I felt that having Lionel present with the king, and when you learn later after the movie finishes that he was there during all the king's speeches after that first important one when he announces that there's a Second World War. Do you think that there's an element of maybe needless pandering, though, in that we get all these elements of, you know, the difference in their class and that where they are in their, you know, in their social structure. You know, the queen is uncomfortable with her being the queen. You know, she says, I married you because you had this beautiful stammer and I thought I'd never have to be in this life. But do you think in a way, I mean, it's a beautiful story if it's true, you know, but regardless of that, do you feel like it's at all needless pandering to show them sort of powerless without somebody from the lower class there? You know, are we supposed to broadcast ourselves onto him, onto Lionel, and say like, oh, I really do have a piece in history? Are you supposed to see yourself in that?
Well, do you mean to say that we're meant to broadcast ourselves onto Lionel in the sense of we want to think that if we were to meet a king or I don't know, a celebrity or whatever the equivalent is in American culture, that we would have something to offer, that we would that we could be a part, that we could be a friend, we could have a normal relationship? Or are you saying that it's more along the lines of that can a regular person have a significant role in history?
Sort of both. You know, the question of whether, I just who you're supposed to identify with during the movie, because I found myself identifying with Lionel, obviously. But the king's also made to seem more like a regular person through his interaction with Lionel. So he's made accessible through this character that I think we're supposed to put ourselves onto. I have to think about it more.
Yeah, fair enough. I mean, I think that we're meant to identify with the king on some level, if only because we learn a great deal about his upbringing and his family.
Yeah, he never wanted to be king. He's fighting against it the whole time, and he's trying to. The only reason why he really wants to get over the stammer is because he's thrust with this responsibility. He has a responsibility not only to his family but to his country.
Well, I mean, I think that as, you know, as an American not terribly sentimental about the royal family, my reaction to it was this is a situation both in a familial sense and in the sense of establishing a government that is completely dysfunctional and screwed up. I mean, this is not a normal family, and it's the kind of thing where you'd expect more stammering out of a family in which there's so much inbreeding over the centuries.
Oh, they're not the Habsburgs, so.
Indeed. Yeah, I mean, it's difficult because I think that identifying with either one is certainly possible as the movie goes on, but I think what the movie excels at is in crafting these very intimate moments, and this moment where we see the king and his speech therapist going down this long hallway. They go right past the throne room where the speech is supposedly being performed. We even see him posing for a photo op, supposedly at the desk in front of the microphones, but instead he goes into this little sound booth and it's just the two of them there with an open window, and it's a very nice, quiet little moment where it's just him and a microphone and his friend.
The movie definitely excels at using silence and forcing you to focus on what's going on in the interaction between the characters, and you know, I think it uses that to the effect of you're trying to think about what they're feeling or thinking towards each other in the moment, and I think that's a very effective you know, it's not just cheap. I think it works.
Yeah, something worth mentioning here, I think, is that you're absolutely right about that. And I think that we actually did not have the best experience watching this movie because there was a high-pitched kind of squeaking sound happening periodically in the background. Now, we were told afterward that it was due to the whenever there are high winds in the vicinity of this building, it causes the sound to squeak through the vents periodically, which what they really meant was no refunds, unfortunately. But it was very telling to me because it was distracting enough that that I found myself wanting to walk out and speak to them, see if it was a problem with the sound system. But I could not find a single moment where the scene felt like it was going to break. There were break long enough into a period of inactivity where I wouldn't miss something. I mean, it actually reminded me of a movie that Daniel, you and I saw a couple of years ago, Doubt.
Yeah, you couldn't walk out on Doubt. Yeah.
Significant lengths of time, long, long scenes to the point of gradually increasing tension. You never see this in movies. You never see scenes that last 10 or 15 minutes long with no break in between
them. I remember Doubt being kind of mesmerizing and a little bit like hard to watch because it was so tense all the time. There was never a break there.
Yeah, I mean, this is a different kind of tension. Certainly, yeah. It's the tension of his just crippling inadequacy, and you feel it like this is a whiny king. He never stops whining, but at the same time, he's got a lot to whine about. So, it's a balance, and I think the film strikes it rather well.
Yeah, I mean, the film completely hinges on the friendship. I think that worked. I think that
we've not talked about Jeffrey Rush's performance at all.
No, he was fantastic. I quite enjoy his ability to connect with the king's character. I guess all the comedy bits that he threw in there, just the witty, you know, retorts.
Yeah, this is actually an amazingly funny movie. I was surprised how many times
I thought it was going to be kind of boring and drab, and it wasn't. It was pretty upbeat the entire time, just tense.
He was definitely a character who appreciated his country's history and their heritage because, you know, he's memorized Shakespeare and... we're talking about Lionel, right?
Oh yes,
yeah. He's memorized Shakespeare and he recites that, and he's a.
Well, in his case, it's the history of the realm, not the history of his country, because he is Australian. But still, he obviously respects English culture
Yeah. But the part that I laughed out loud, and I heard other people in the theater, and I think you did too, was when they're in Westminster Chapel and preparing for his accession.
Ascension.
Is it ascent or is it the coronation or is that
coronation? Yeah, coronation.
For when they're
putting the crown on his head. Yeah,
when they're putting the crown on his head. They're
we're not British. What do you want from us?
I like the monarchy.
But he walks across and he says, "I can't believe I'm walking on Handel."
On Handel, Dickens, and who were the other ones?
I don't remember. Yeah. But I mean, it was just a charm.
On several famous Englishmen, yeah.
Who were buried there. So that was just a fantastic little reminder of what England has produced
Just their history.
Yeah, I think that Jeffrey Rush gave a formidable performance here, but it's also I think what we picked up on in the trailer, which is that he always has the perfect thing to say, is kind of where the script starts to strain believability a little bit. Like I actually heard one podcaster refer to it, and I wish I remember who said this, so as to give credit where credit is due. All I remember is that she was female. She referred to him as the manic pixie speech therapist. The perfect speech therapist who says just the right thing to drag the brooding male lead out of his shell, and I think there's definitely something to that, but this was just such a solid performance and such chemistry between these two actors that I don't think it mattered so much.
Yeah, it would have been nice maybe if Lionel made a few more mistakes or he didn't know how to handle something a certain way, but I don't know. I like the way he retorts. I thought it worked well with the king who couldn't speak.
Well, I think it also... I think the only side effect that it had on the movie, as far as my reaction to it, was that when the inevitable, I would say almost romantic moment occurs where there's a parting of the ways, I'll just leave it at that.
It has to happen.
It has to happen, yeah. There was no tension there. You knew at some point they were going to get back together. Absolutely no tension.
Yeah.
It was just a question of when. but I don't think that really took much away from it, and I think it was still a very nice and beautifully shot moment. Like that's something we haven't even touched on is this movie makes the best use of London fog that I have ever seen. just some absolutely gorgeous and striking shots of Buckingham Palace and the paths and so forth in the vicinity of that, and it's just a beautiful looking movie.
Would you call that the climax of the movie? That part where they're in the park together and Lionel pushes.
Oh, no, that's not that. The climax of the movie is the speech, certainly. But
really?
The climax in the relationship, though, is that.
Yeah, scene. But I mean, isn't the movie about the relationship?
Yeah, I would say.
I suppose so.
I mean, we all know he's going to deliver the speech. We all know it's going to go well. So I think for him getting back together with Lionel, it is the climax of the movie, because that's when you know everything's going to be okay, that he's really going to go out there and win the day. Not necessarily the speech itself, because you already know that's going to happen.
Mm.
But he's been exposed to the person with the ability to help him overcome his fear of speaking.
What did you guys think of Helena Bonham Carter in this movie?
I can't stand her, and I thought she did a fabulous job. And as one of the few female performers in the, I mean, the movie doesn't focus on any female.
Certainly not. She's certainly the female lead, and she's still just a supporting character. But this is the only. She was actually one of the draws for me for this movie, because I saw the trailer, and there was that scene where she's sitting on the king's chest.
Yes.
And he's exercising his diaphragm by sharply breathing in and breathing out.
If you know what I mean.
And she said, "Indeed." And she says, "This is jolly good fun, actually." And it actually looked like Helena Bonham Carter was having a good time, which is not something that I've seen her do in a role. Well, let me put it another way: I've seen her have a good time in roles, but I've seen her have a good time being very, very evil,
or crazy,
or quirky, or screwed up in some way. So to see her play a normal-ish loving character was kind of jarring, but also very, very nice. I mean, it was she did a fantastic job.
Yeah, I liked her performance. I didn't really like the character as much as the performance. I thought for someone who complained about not wanting to ever have the aristocratic type life, she fit really easily into it, and she kind of, you know, she ordered people around, had expectations of, you know, everybody how to address her. I don't know, like, I guess for her to have that statement, like, "I never wanted this, I married you for your stammer," I'm like, yeah, sure you did.
I don't know, what I got from that scene was her saying, "I never wanted this, but I kind of do now, so, you know, get your shit together."
But she also found Lionel by going out on her own, going into an environment which is not the standard for a person of her position to be in.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, at no point in the film did I doubt that she cared deeply for her husband, and I think that was all she really needed to convey in a portrayal that was really limited to either her relationship with the husband and her role as queen and her disapproval of the brief king, her brother-in-law.
All too brief.
Yeah. Well, with that, I think that brings us to the end of our discussion of the king's speech. But
should we give a grade for it?
We usually save the grade for the website itself, but Daniel, who do you think would enjoy this movie? Who do you think should see it?
I think everyone should see it. I think it's a solid movie. I liked it, and I thought the movie looked stupid based on the trailer. So if it can convince me it's good, I think everyone could enjoy it.
I would agree with that. I think this is a movie that I could pretty safely bring anyone to. You might notice that it's rated R. It's rated R for language, for one very comical scene, which I will not spoil, but
it has Churchill, and Churchill is always rated R.
Indeed. I think we're thinking of different scenes here, but...
No, Churchill himself. He's a rated R person.
All right, so it's rated R for language and Churchill. You heard it here first. Yeah. But this is a movie I would feel safe bringing my grandparents to if they were alive. But it's a very nice movie.
I guess the only people who wouldn't enjoy it are people who just really like action movies.
And for anyone who saw Pride and Prejudice, there are an actor and an actress in the 1995 Colin Firth Pride and Prejudice who make appearances in this film. They're not major characters, but...
Oh, that's quite right. The wife of Lionel Logue, I believe, is played by...
It's Elizabeth. From the 1990s.
That's right. I don't remember the actress's name, but you're quite right about that. So.
And then,
of course, Colin Firth himself is in the film. I have to admit my ignorance here. I've actually not seen the 1995 one. I've only seen the 2004 one with Keira Knightley and all the swooping helicopter shots where she's running up on cliffs and things.
And Glenn has been shot for his cinematic ignorance of the singular best orchestrated.
Indeed, I'm a complete fraud of a movie critic.
Yeah,
you heard that here first as well.
You haven't seen The Godfather, which is kind of blasphemy.
You know, I'm very tempted to edit that statement out, but I don't think I'm going to, so...
You also haven't seen Casablanca.
You can stop now. All right, that brings us to the end of our discussion of the King's Speech. Thank you, and have a good night.